You're tuned in to This Week in Palestine, a space where truth isn't softened for the powerful, where resistance is daily reality, and where solidarity is a heartbeat carried across generations. From the heart of occupation, voices rise, not as isolated whispers, but together in chorus with movements around the world, demanding justice, dignity, and liberation. This is more than a broadcast. It is a lifeline, a thread stretching from Gaza to every corner of the globe, binding shattered homes to hope, rubble to resolve, grief to a future still worth imagining. A reminder that even in the darkest night, the flame of defiance endures. Each week, we bring reporting that refuses euphemism, analysis that cuts through distortion, and reflections that center Palestinian life in its depth, struggle, beauty, and humanity. We do not sanitize. We do not soften. We speak plainly because the stakes are too high for anything less. We trace the architecture of power, the policies that suffocate, the narratives that erase, the weapons that silence, and follow their echoes across borders. From Ferguson to Jenin, from refugee camps to classrooms, from Gaza to the global conscience. This Week in Palestine is not polite avoidance. It is testimony. It is urgency. It is solidarity without apology. Because the struggle for liberation is not confined to one land or one moment. It is shared. It is global. And it is sacred. Before we begin, a quick reminder. The views in this hour belong to our hosts and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of WZBC Boston College or its Board of Trustees. This is not a space for polite avoidance or softened language. This is a space for truth direct, urgent, and unapologetic. Good morning. Good evening. Wherever you're listening from, thank you for being here. I'm your host, Bethany Marks, and it's an honor to welcome you back to This Week in Palestine. Today is Sunday, January 11, 2026. Today, our gaze turns again to Gaza and the West Bank, lands under siege, enduring what no land should endure. We look toward the ruins where homes once stood, toward lives uprooted under a weight of global indifference that feels heavier than the earth itself. As headlines fade, one truth remains. Palestinians continue to resist, even now, even as the shadow of reinvasion stretches across the horizon. Let's be honest, peace was never the goal of the occupier. The goal has always been opportunity. To erase, to uproot, to redraw history with bulldozers and bombs. And the world watches some in silence, others in open complicity. So we must ask, when will the world reckon with its silence? When will conscience outweigh convenience? How long must a people suffer before their lives are seen as sacred? Stay with us as we strip away the silence, as we uplift the resilient, as we hold space for truth that refuses to be buried. You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, Boston College. Today, I bring you a look at a recent YouTube video titled "There Is No Anti-Semitism Crisis: How Zionists Constructed a Moral Panic." In this piece, The creators argue that claims of a widespread anti-Semitism emergency are being exaggerated and strategically framed to silence criticism of Israeli government policies and Palestinian advocacy. They suggest that certain political groups and institutions deliberately conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, creating a climate where expressing empathy for Palestinians, questioning U.S. foreign policy, or challenging pro-Israel political figures is portrayed as hateful. According to the video, this manufactured moral panic pressures universities, media, and public figures to suppress dissent while diluting the meaning of real anti-Semitism by using the term as a political shield rather than addressing genuine hatred.
You might have heard that there is a global anti-Semitism crisis or a global surge in anti-Semitism. Such assertions are all over the mainstream media and are being repeated by pretty much everyone as if this is just uncontroversial fact. This just so happens to be occurring concurrently with Israel massacring people in Gaza in droves, something that is quite convenient for Israel's supporters, as Israel is of course the supposed Jewish state. So they get a lot of utility out of claims that Jews are facing a dangerous crisis where they are being targeted for identity-based hatred, as this can be utilized to paint the Israeli Jewish perpetrators of genocide and their Zionist Jewish supporters abroad as actually being victims themselves, thus supposedly justifying their actions. It also, of course, just in general helps with smearing critics of Israel as anti-Semites and helps to distract from the raw facts on the ground of what Israel does. But what about the global rise in anti-Semitism? It's just an extremely useful cliche. But even if it is being misused like that, there could still actually be a massive global anti-Semitism crisis, a surge in global anti-Semitism. It could just be a coincidence that this crisis is practically exclusively being utilized as a cudgel to stifle anti-Israel dissent. It can't be assumed to not be happening just because it's being utilized for dishonest purposes. So in this video, we will analyze whether this purported anti-Semitism crisis is actually happening by looking at the actual evidence that those who claim it is provide for it. It's very rare for anyone to actually try and look into the evidence for these claims. Even many pro-Palestine people tend to just accept that there is this ever-present global anti-Semitism crisis as an uncontroversial fact that they need to specially account for some reason.
Because global anti-Semitism is rising, it is not helping anyone to deny that.
This ad is about, obviously, like, anti-Semitic hate rising in America, which is very real.
One prominent recent example of this is the YouTuber PhilosophyTube. She made a brief statement regarding Israel's actions in Gaza in a broader video, which was mainly about the Native American genocide. And this statement is a perfect example of the kind of chilling effect that this narrative of there being a global anti-Semitism crisis has on pro-Palestine and anti-Israel speech. Let's watch.
This is a bigger topic than we have time to get into today, but PhilosophyTube's audience has a diversity of political views, and I'm sure some of you will be drawing parallels between the process that the United States went through with American Indians and the process Israel has gone through with Palestinians since it was founded in 1948. Illegal settlements, crimes by settlers tolerated by government, American presidents saying they want to just move in and take over the land. Our question for today is, why is America the way that it is? And today, in America, many people are protesting the actions of the Israeli government. You may have heard people describe Israel as a settler colonial state or as genocidal, and these historical parallels are partly why they say that. I am aware that Israeli scholars have their responses, that the US and Israel are not the only countries to instantiate this pattern or something very close to it, and that a proper treatment of this subject would need to be done at length with due concern for the global rise in anti-Semitic hate crime that we've seen over the last few years. Again, much bigger topic than we have time to get into today.
Now, this is an interesting statement for a couple of reasons. First, anti-Semitism is totally irrelevant to the question of whether or not Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians or whether or not Israel is a colonial state. It doesn't make any sense to inject something here about anti-Semitism or really anything about the religious identity or the ethnic identity of the perpetrators of such acts, regardless of what they may be, into such discussions. There is nothing in any definition of genocide or colonialism that stipulates that the perpetrators get some sort of pass if they are discriminated against in some way. And here, they certainly aren't anyway, as in the context of Israel, Jews are the dominant group. Israel is a country run by and for them at the expense of Palestinians. So it's extremely weird to say that there is a need to account for real or imagined discrimination against them when discussing these issues. It makes as much sense to bring this up here as it would to acknowledge potential anti-white sentiment in the context of a discussion about the Native American genocides, or to express your concern regarding a surge in anti-German hate crimes in regards to a discussion of the Holocaust. Such notions can only ever serve to draw a false equivalence, to distract, or to obfuscate. There's an implication at play here that there is something special about Jews, something that makes it pertinent that their victimhood be mentioned even in situations like that of the Gaza genocide, where Jews are, in fact, pretty much the furthest things they could ever possibly be from the victims. This is an example of Jewish exceptionalism, which is one of the core underpinnings of modern pro-Israel propaganda, key to ensuring that the Western public does not turn against Israel. I've explained what Jewish exceptionalism is and analyzed it thoroughly in a dedicated video on the topic that I highly suggest that you watch after you're done with this one. But for a quick short summary, it's the idea prevalent in the West that Jews are practically innately oppressed and discriminated against, and that this means that by extension, Israel, as the so-called Jewish state, therefore needs to be granted some degree of special consideration on that basis. And you can see that very clearly here in what PhilosophyTube said, because in no other case would you really ever see anyone seriously imply that conversations about a genocide or other types of atrocities need to involve some sort of disclaimer about prejudice against whatever group it is that the perpetrators happen to belong to. Secondly, it's interesting how PhilosophyTube says that some think there is a genocide, rather than outright just saying unambiguously herself that it is one. But then after that, when she follows that up with her claim about there being a surge in global anti-Semitism, there is no such qualifier. There is no need for doubt. It's presented as just an uncontroversial fact. She takes it entirely for granted. There's no need to clarify that that's just some people's opinion, no need to mention potential objections to it, as she did with the idea that there's a genocide in Gaza and Israeli scholars, or even to provide any evidence herself that it's happening. It's just known. I think that deep down, even though she might be a bit iffy about saying it publicly, PhilosophyTube does think there's a genocide in Gaza. She's probably fought that for a long time, in fact. But she is unwilling to just come out and outright say that, without any caveats, in a video on her main and most prominent channel. And the reason why she's so unwilling to do so is precisely because of this narrative of there being a global rise in anti-Semitism, which she herself has surely seen repeated many times. This narrative has worked on her precisely how those who initially spread it would like for it to work. It has pushed her into carefully regulating her speech in ways that would simply never occur in any remotely analogous circumstance. Perhaps she is worried about potential consequences to her burgeoning acting career if she were, for example, to be branded an anti-Semite for not paying lip service to both sides. Perhaps she's too worried about potentially losing Zionist members of her audience to make a less ambiguous statement. Or perhaps she really has been genuinely convinced by the endless flurry of mainstream media headlines about there supposedly being an anti-Semitism crisis, to the extent that she is now actually really genuinely concerned about potentially contributing to it by noting the simple fact, without any caveats, that the Jews of Israel are genociding Palestinians for the crime of not being Jewish. But if she does genuinely believe that, then, well, she's wrong too. Because there is no global surge in anti-Semitism, nor is there a global anti-Semitism crisis, or whatever other way they put this. This is rather an idea that has been constructed by pro-Israel advocacy groups and then spread by governments in the mainstream media as a conscious and deliberate pro-Israel propaganda strategy. It serves to draw attention away from Israeli crimes and to frame their perpetrators and their supporters abroad as actually themselves being the victims. And many have, unfortunately, like PhilosophyTube, fallen for this narrative hook, line, and sinker, without even so much as thinking about whether they might be getting manipulated, or how them helping to spread this narrative might actually be harmful. This video is not about PhilosophyTube specifically. She just provides us with a recent illustrative example of how this carefully constructed lie has been accepted all too easily by people who should really know better. The idea of there being a massive global anti-Semitism issue in the present day entirely originates from a network of loosely affiliated pro-Israel advocacy organizations from all around the world, but mostly concentrated in the developed world and in the West. They have been weaponizing this notion for at least a couple of decades at this point. Many dozens of different countries have such organizations, but they all operate in pretty much the exact same ways. They masquerade as being neutral Jewish advocacy organizations dedicated to fighting anti-Semitism. The purpose of this is to create a cover of respectability, reliability, and neutrality that can then be weaponized for pro-Israel activism. And one of the biggest ways in which they do this is by utilizing the deference that they tend to get from the mainstream media and governments to equate pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel speech with anti-Semitism, as basically being equal to like neo-Nazis calling for a second Holocaust. In this video, we're going to be looking at some prominent examples of these groups, each of whom produces reports on anti-Semitism, whose findings are then repeated in the mainstream media of their respective countries and also of other countries without so much as a question about their reliability even being asked. Let's begin with an organization from the UK, because that's where PhilosophyTube is from. And also, the UK is probably Israel's second or third most significant enabler, after the US and maybe Germany. Campaign Against Anti-Semitism is one of the most important British pro-Israel organizations, whose name just really perfectly demonstrates precisely what I said regarding these groups using the supposed struggle against anti-Semitism as a front to legitimize their actual purpose, advocacy for Zionism. It's very possible, in fact, pretty likely, that given this group's huge influence over the narrative on Israel and anti-Semitism in the UK, their lobbying has influenced PhilosophyTube's own perceptions on this matter. In the beginning of September of 2025, they released the results of a poll that they had recently commissioned. This poll pertains to be proof of there being a shocking rise in anti-Semitic sentiments among the British population. A crisis of anti-Semitism, if you will. This conclusion was repeated literally dozens of times in the British and international mainstream media. 1 in 5 Britons are now anti-Semitic, said the Telegraph, who were among others that reported on this poll, like the Daily Mail and the Express, in articles that were then widely syndicated to dozens of other news outlets, helping to reinforce the idea that British Jews are in perennial peril in many people's heads. Most people are just going to read the headline and take it for granted as true. They're never going to analyze the actual evidence for these claims. But we are. If you actually look at the contents of this poll and the methodology that it uses for branding respondents as anti-Semitic, it's clear that it was designed for the express purpose of equating opposition to Israel and the Gaza genocide with anti-Semitism, and then using the vastly inflated results that this inevitably produces to spread the idea that anti-Semitism is on the rise, to generate precisely the sort of headlines that we just went over. They asked each person who was polled a series of 12 questions, and those who affirmed 4 or more of them were considered to be anti-Semitic. These questions begin, innocently enough, by asking people things like whether they trust Jews as much as they do other people in business, something that only 5% of respondents said they do not, and whether they are as open to having Jewish friends as they are friends of any other group, which only 3% of respondents said they would not be. In fact, in all of these questions, which ask people about actual anti-Semitic views that they may hold, the answers are overwhelmingly not anti-Semitic at all. So then, where exactly do they get the 1 in 5 number from? Well, it's from the other batch of 6 questions, all of which are about negative views on Israel. For example, 25% said that they would not be comfortable associating with people who openly support Israel. 45% said that Israel treats Palestinians like the Nazis treated Jews. And 29% said that Israel and its supporters are a bad influence on Britain's democracy. All of these are considered by the conclusions of this poll as equally anti-Semitic as someone saying that they would never befriend a Jew. For some perspective as to just how much they clearly intentionally skewed the results here, the 6 actually anti-Semitic statements were on average supported by just 8% of respondents, that is, 1 in 12, not 1 in 5, compared to 21% for the anti-Israel questions, which is 1 in 5. So it's clear that this poll's conclusion that 1 in 5 Britons are anti-Semitic doesn't actually mean that they're anti-Semitic. Rather, that assertion is totally carried by people's answers to the anti-Israel questions. Their answers to the actual anti-Semitic questions were far, far less enthusiastic. The point of this poll is nothing resembling an objective analysis of anti-Semitic attitudes. It's rather very purposefully designed to get the preferred result of the organization that commissioned it, and thus to give a seemingly respectable and authoritative veneer to the anti-Semitism crisis narrative, and of course to further the notion that anything anti-Israel is anti-Semitic. Funnily enough, this same organization has run similar polls going all the way back to 2015. And if you look at the results they used to get for the actual anti-Semitic questions back then, and then compare them to the results that they got in 2025, then it would appear that anti-Semitic attitudes have actually decreased substantially in the last 10 years, not risen. Quite contrary to the idea of there being an anti-Semitism crisis or a surge in anti-Semitism. Back in 2015, for example, 11% of respondents affirmed the notion that Jews were not as honest in business as other people, compared to just 5% in the 2025 poll. And 25% affirmed the notion that Jews chase money more than other people, compared to 14% in 2025. Hilariously, they had to start including more anti-Israel statements in their polls to keep their desired conclusion of there being an anti-Semitism crisis going, because their own poll results indicate that anti-Semitism is actually significantly less prevalent now than it used to be. The only thing that's actually gone up is anti-Israel sentiment, as you would expect, given the genocide. Now, I'd love to be able to compare these numbers to similar polls regarding people's attitudes to other groups in the UK, or in most other places for that matter, because I would hazard a guess that many other minorities face prejudices from far more than just 8% of the population, as well as actual systemic government oppression that is much more serious than just negative interpersonal feelings are. But these sorts of polls, surveys, studies, and databases of anti-group attitudes or incidents are only really carried out and spread with any sort of frequency in regards to anti-Jewish prejudices by pro-Israel organizations. That should maybe give us a bit of a clue as to whether or not there's an effort to manipulate public opinion to further a broader political goal involved here. While we're on the UK, I'd like to mention another UK-based pro-Israel advocacy group, the Community Security Trust, founded by a billionaire businessman who is close personal friends with Benjamin Netanyahu. This organization releases a yearly report which purports to list supposed anti-Semitic incidents in the UK, which is considered authoritative by the UK government and the British mainstream media. In fact, it's considered so reliable that the organization is even funded by the UK government, which has historically been one of Israel's most important backers. Their anti-Semitic incident counting system is so opaque that for all we know, they could just be inventing the numbers entirely, as they provide no evidence that most of them even happened, beyond just their word. And it's very fair to be suspicious of this, given their overtly pro-Israel political line, which clearly would benefit greatly from exaggerating or lying about anti-Semitism. As you'll be seeing frequently throughout this video, this is a theme with these sorts of lists. For the vast majority of the incidents that they claim to have logged, the only evidence is, someone told us this happened, trust us. Among the alleged incidents included in their report, they state that 327 of them were people comparing Israel to the Nazis, which is a perfectly valid opinion to hold regarding Israel's actions. Zionists like to state this is somehow by default anti-Semitic, not because there's any real validity to the idea that it is. Their argument for it is basically, it hurts my sensibilities because the Nazis killed Jews, rather than any real objective assessment on whether Israel does things that could be compared to what the Nazis did in any way. The fact of the matter is, if someone looks at the Gaza genocide and is reminded of the Holocaust, then that is simply an opinion based on their own assessment of the facts, not anti-Semitism. A great way for Zionists to avoid being compared to the Nazis would be to not do things that remind people of the Nazis. The real reason for their objection to this comparison and their attempt to make it impermissible by branding it anti-Semitic, one is just that it's useful to pad the stats, and the second, more significant one, is that they are well aware of the sort of power that this comparison holds, given the perception of the Nazis in Western societies as like the ultimate evil. And so, in a rather pathetic frantic attempt to shut down any potential use of this powerful comparison that immediately resonates with most people. They lazily brand it as anti-Semitic to try and discourage people from making such comparisons, and now all of a sudden, their anti-Semitic incident list is now padded by 327 such examples of comparisons of Israel to the Nazis, with each one of those instances being considered as an equal anti-Semitic incident to stuff like neo-Nazi assaults on Jews. Something worth noting before moving on here is that this report specifically states that they consider it an anti-Semitic incident if anti-Israel or pro-Palestinian speech occurs near or at Jewish institutions. This might seem reasonable at a glance if you don't really think about it very much, but the fact is that the vast majority of Jewish institutions, including even synagogues, are overtly and proudly pro-Israel. If pro-Israel institutions are targeted with anti-Israel protests, then that is simply a protest based on their politics, regardless of whether they're Jewish or not, and cannot immediately simply be discounted as anti-Semitism. In no other circumstance would it be considered automatically hate speech or even discriminatory at all to protest an institution for its political positions. For example, pro-choice for abortion protesters have frequently targeted Catholic churches because the Catholic Church is very famously against abortion rights. And the notion that such protests constitute hate crimes rather than just political protests based on that institution's political positions is scarcely taken seriously at all, let alone really put forth much. Yet protesting at, or even just around, Jewish institutions which support Israel, including, in some cases, outright material support for the IDF, you know, the military doing the genocide in Gaza right now, is widely considered to be not just off-limits, but also anti-Semitic hate crimes. For an example of this from the US, a synagogue named after the founder of political Zionism, Theodor Herzl, was targeted with anti-Israel graffiti. This synagogue, which as its name indicates, is openly pro-Israel, runs campaigns to donate supplies to IDF soldiers currently doing genocide, and frequently posts pro-Israel and pro-IDF propaganda on its social media pages. They refer to IDF soldiers genociding Gaza as our soldiers. Yet despite the fact this is very clearly a pro-Israel institution that, no exaggeration, provides material support to the IDF, anti-Israel graffiti on their building was immediately branded as an anti-Semitic hate crime by everyone who reported on the story, by the FBI, and even by some supposedly pro-Palestinian political commentators such as Owen Jones, who described this as little more than age-old anti-Jewish hate. No other possibility was even entertained, and this is a pattern that is repeated over and over and over. Clear political protest against institutions that support Israeli genocide is painted as anti-Semitic, as if there could never possibly be any valid reason to protest a Jewish institution, because Jews are, after all, an exception. And it wouldn't surprise me to see people brand this part of my video here especially as anti-Semitic, though they're probably going to do that for the entire video, just for even acknowledging the possibility that there can be political rather than anti-Semitic reasons to protest Jewish institutions, a notion that would not at all be controversial for any other identity group. So the overall point here is that the Community Security Trust claims to take special care in their anti-Semitic incident report to differentiate between anti-Zionism and anti-Israel speech and anti-Semitism. But given their very clear political agenda, and the fact that it's evident that they don't actually do that at all, you'd have to be a complete moron to trust their judgment on this. And that report is entirely based on the reader trusting them as a source and trusting their judgment on what does and doesn't constitute anti-Semitism. So it's pretty much just completely bunk. It's a minority of actual, real, well-evidenced anti-Semitic incidents thrown in with a majority of incidents for which there is little to no evidence or outright no evidence, and a ton of supposed anti-Semitic incidents that aren't anti-Semitic incidents at all and that are just anti-Israel political protests anti-Israel political speech. The same is true for every single one of these anti-Semitic incident reports. Now let us move on to the USA, Israel's most resolute ally. It's home to the most notorious of these sorts of organizations, the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. The ADL is an openly ethno-nationalist, pro-Israel organization, which isn't exactly subtle about its support for Jewish supremacism. For example, the ADL often releases propaganda guidebooks for Zionists to teach them how to counter anti-Israel arguments. In them, they advise Zionists to argue that Israel must deny Palestinians their rights because otherwise they would replace Jews due to their high birth rates, which would dilute Israel's nationalist identity, which is just a common white nationalist argument repurposed for Jews. The ADL ridiculously holds this position while also regularly denouncing said white nationalists for making those exact same arguments in regards to immigrants in the USA. This is a fantastic example of how these lobby groups use other activities to create a front for their main goal of pro-Israel advocacy. They generate this aura of mainstream credibility with progressive rhetoric about diversity, inclusion, and denouncements of hate speech at home, which they then utilize to push the exact opposite in regards to Israel. The ADL in particular makes great use of this front, as it maintains the world's most influential and oft-cited anti-Semitic incident database. It is cited uncritically as an authoritative source on anti-Semitism in the mainstream media and by the US government. Even supposed news media rivals like CNN and Fox News are both in agreement that uncritically repeating the ADL's narrative of anti-Semitism is great. It is in large part due to the ADL's work that this narrative of there being a global anti-Semitism crisis and a global rise in anti-Semitism, which seemingly never ends as they've been saying this for like decades now, has come to be accepted in the USA and really in the wider Western world as a whole. Yet when scrutinized, the ADL's anti-Semitic incident tracker falls apart very, very easily. Firstly, the overwhelming majority of the incidents that they list have no evidence for them ever even having happened at all. It's just reported to the ADL or identified by the ADL. Literally nothing else. Some of them actually don't even have any description as to what is even alleged to have happened. They just say confidential. Fantastic evidence. I'm definitely going to just uncritically accept that as a real anti-Semitic incident. You're supposed to just take them at their word that these incidents were really reported to them rather than just made up, and they clearly have very real political incentives to just make this sort of thing up. So you actually shouldn't just take them at their word here. Accepting claims made with zero evidence provided is already questionable even from relatively neutral sources. And the ADL is definitely not a relatively neutral source. Also, interestingly, the present version of the ADL anti-Semitic incident tracker does not even tell you where the ADL got their info from. It used to, but not anymore. The current version just lists type of incident, location, and a description of the alleged incident, with absolutely no indication of what their source for this is. So it's even worse and less reliable now than it used to be before. And even if these incidents were genuinely reported to the ADL by someone, then that would still be little more than someone said so. An anecdote with zero evidence. That'd be slightly more credible than just the ADL themselves saying so, but still, not by much. As some dude said this happened is not exactly the most compelling evidence by itself in any circumstance. And it's even less compelling in this context when you consider the fact that the most reliable polls available for American Jewish opinion on Israel indicate that around 8 in 10 American Jews consider caring about Israel to be integral to their Jewish identity, and that 3 in 4 of them have a favorable view of Israel. So it's clear that in the first place, this is not a group of people that in its majority can have its independent judgment of whether something constitutes anti-Semitism or anti-Zionism taken at face value. For most American Jews, those two things are going to be one and the same. They also have the same political incentives to invent or exaggerate incidents to pad the stats that the ADL does. Secondly, the majority of these supposed anti-Semitic incidents are, by the ADL's own admission, anti-Israel. They consider anti-Israel speech to be anti-Semitic practically by default, and that's where most of their alleged incidents come from. Let me provide you with some examples of their listed anti-Semitic hate crimes. At an anti-Israel rally organized by Jewish Voice for Peace and the Democratic Socialists of America, a speaker referred pejoratively to the Zionists. Protesters also displayed signs that read, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," a slogan commonly used to call for an end to the Jewish state. So, according to the ADL, thinking that being a Zionist, that is, a supporter of a Jewish supremacist ethnostate, is bad, is by default anti-Semitism, and being against the existence of a Jewish supremacist ethnostate that privileges Jews at the expense of others is also anti-Semitism. The rest of these are really just self-explanatory. I don't even need to provide you with any extra context. At an anti-Israel rally organized by Free Palestine Eugene, protesters displayed signs that read, "Zionism is fascism." At an anti-Israel rally organized by Islanders for Palestine, protesters held signs with messages that included, "End the Zionist apartheid." A sticker was pasted on a street sign that read, "Zionism is terrorism." A flyer that read, "Zionism is terrorism," was posted in a public area. At an anti-Israel rally organized by the Palestinian Youth Movement and the Party for Socialism and Liberation, protesters displayed signs with messages that included, "Zionism equals apartheid." At an anti-Israel rally organized by the Party for Socialism and Liberation, protesters displayed signs with messages that read, "Resistance against occupation is a human right." I could go on for a while here because there's literally thousands that are like this, but you get the point. For the ADL, calling Zionism terrorism, saying that resistance is a human right, saying that Israel does apartheid, or pretty much any other instance of anti-Israel political speech, constitutes an anti-Semitic incident that is counted equally in the total to, say, neo-Nazis marching through the streets and heiling Hitler, or screaming racial slurs while committing a hate crime assault. So it's clear that they have concocted a narrative here of there being an anti-Semitism crisis in the exact same way that the other two examples that we went over did. Lastly, it also bears mentioning that there are no other organizations doing something similar to this to count alleged hate crimes against other groups of people. This means that there is a complete lack of any point of comparison, which gives these anti-Semitic incident trackers the privilege of people not having any perspective from which to judge whether the number of incidents that they allege to have happened is really even that high relative to what other groups face. The hysteria and moral panic that they clearly aim to create is just considered warranted by default as a result of this total lack of perspective. Even the 9,000 supposed anti-Semitic incidents that the ADL counted in its most recent, hilariously padded incident list would probably not seem quite as weighty if it were to be compared to a similar database that logged all instances of, say, anti-black speech and other such hate crimes. But lucky for the ADL, no such database exists. For one last illustrative example here of how this narrative is purposefully constructed for pro-Israel propaganda purposes all over the world, even in places where you really might not expect it at all, let's look at Argentina. This is probably not a place that you would think to be a very likely target for this sort of propaganda. After all, it's a country in the south of Latin America that is not particularly geopolitically important outside of its own region, and that is certainly not at all a major player, or even like a middling player, in global politics. And yet, it still has these sorts of pro-Israel advocacy groups screeching about a rise in anti-Semitism while producing anti-Semitic incident lists. The most prominent of these groups in Argentina is called the DAIA, short for the Argentine Delegation of Israelite Associations. They are particularly notable for constantly reporting anyone remotely prominent who says anything negative about Israel to the police for anti-Semitism, a fact that they proudly gloat about in their anti-Semitism report for 2024. For instance, in this report, they brag about how, in one case, they reported left-wing politician Alejandro Bodart for hate speech, which resulted in him being convicted and getting a 6-month suspended prison sentence. His offense? Saying that Zionism is like Nazism. Just like with the UK and US examples, the DAIA's claims of rising anti-Semitism in Argentina are always uncritically repeated in the Argentine mainstream media and parroted by the Argentine government, helping to manufacture an alternate reality in the minds of the public in which the country's prominent and very much not oppressed Jewish population are somehow actually massively oppressed and in endless peril. Just like Jews in pretty much every other country are also framed as, in order to paint the genocide genocide in Gaza as a defensive action by a globally marginalized population. The Dyer's list of purported anti-Semitic incidents in Argentina is even more brazenly stupid than the other examples that we've gone over up until this point. And that's saying a whole lot. The vast majority of them actually aren't even alleged to have happened in real life. Rather, they are just social media posts, the vast majority of which are just people saying negative things about Israel. In fact, most of these social media posts are comments left on the Dyer's own social media pages. For example, one which they list here as an anti-Semitic incident says, "We won't forget or forgive the genocidal Israeli state and the complicit Zionists," with a Palestinian flag emoji. Yeah, that's pretty much the worst anti-Semitic incident ever. Other anti-Semitic incidents that they list include a report that someone saw a sign on a pole that said, "No to the genocide in Gaza." Another is a report that, at a protest, there was a sign accusing Israel of committing genocide. Another is a report that an actor gave a speech after receiving an award where he said, "Gaza will never be defeated," and, "I feel here in my blood, in my ancestors, the need to defend a people who are being murdered." And get ready for this next one, because it's going to give you whiplash. A victim reported that in a university class, a professor said that she was going to read a poem written by a little girl who was a victim of the genocide that Israel is committing against the Palestinian people in Gaza. This is the anti-Semitism crisis and the global rise in anti-Semitism in a nutshell. An absurdly stupid narrative created in order to spin solidarity with the Palestinian people and even just the simple acknowledgement of them as equal human beings into a narrative of Zionist Jewish victimhood, to the point that even reading a poem by a murdered Palestinian child is considered an act of anti-Jewish hatred, all with the goal of reversing the victim and offender as much as possible in the public perception to manufacture consent for the genocide of the Palestinian people and their replacement with Jewish settlers. One more thing that I want to address here before I reach the conclusion of this video is something that people who simply cannot let this narrative go often resort to bringing up once it's pointed out that they're uncritically citing the bunk data from the sorts of pro-Israel organizations that we've gone over here, the FBI hate crime statistics. The logic behind their counter-argument is that while organizations like the ADL and many others might be biased and unreliable, the FBI is somehow more neutral and thus more reliable. So if their data also indicates a supposed surge in anti-Semitism, then the narrative must be true. So okay then, let's analyze the FBI hate crime statistics for the most recent completed year in which they are available, January 2024 to January 2025. At a glance, it does seem like there is a wildly disproportionate amount of hate crimes against Jews relative to other groups. However, there's a lot more to it. As I'm going to demonstrate, that assumption falls flat once we analyze the data further. For example, you might notice something a bit weird here. Anti-white hate crimes are listed as the fifth most common type of hate crime in the USA, pretty much equal with anti-Hispanic or Latino hate crimes. Remember, this is at a time where ICE is literally roaming around the USA, rounding up random brown people under the assumption that they are Hispanic/Latino, and the government is actively trying to whip people into a racist fervor against them. So it is a pretty ridiculous notion that white people get hate-crimed as much as they do, and this is a strong indication that there is something very wrong with this dataset, and that it should be taken with a grain of salt from the get-go. And this is a symptom of how this data is just innately flawed. Firstly, because it is based on reports, not even investigations, let alone actual convictions, actual crimes that are proven to have taken place in a court of law. So if someone files a hate crime to a law enforcement agency that reports statistics to the FBI, it's going to be counted here, regardless of whether or not there is actually any evidence for it beyond just the reporter's word, or any remotely objective assessment of whether it actually constitutes a hate-motivated crime or not. This means that it exhibits the exact same problem as the anti-Semitic incident list that we've gone over. It's based on a pure self-assessment of what constitutes hate against Jews, and no evidence of actual anti-Semitism, or that anything even actually happened, is required for an alleged hate crime to be counted here, especially among the less serious ones, like verbal crimes and vandalism. So if a Zionist Jew sees a sticker on a property that says Free Palestine and then files a police report for hate crime vandalism or intimidation, that would be counted here as an anti-Semitic hate crime. And as I went over earlier, we know for a fact that the FBI themselves and other American policing institutions investigate anti-Israel speech as anti-Jewish hate crimes. So the FBI themselves are clearly complicit in manipulation in service of this narrative, and their statistics are hardly an objective source on this matter. Secondly, this data is somehow much lower quality than even the ADL's horrible data, because the FBI hate crime database provides absolutely no details about the alleged hate crimes that they are counting here. While the ADL at least provides a short description of what they are claiming happened so that you can judge it for yourself, at least from the limited information that they give you, the FBI just counts every crime as a number with absolutely no further info as to what actually supposedly happened. This makes it impossible for us to scrutinize the alleged hate crimes and see whether or not they are actually anti-Jewish rather than just anti-Israel political speech being reported as hate crimes, which is awfully convenient, as it is precisely that ability to scrutinize the data that made it clear in all the other instances that we went over of supposed anti-Semitic incident lists that these sorts of counts are bullshit. Thirdly, the fact that this data is based on reports to law enforcement skews the statistics very badly. It makes them proportionately look much worse than they really are for groups who have little to no reason to mistrust or fear the police. The Southern Poverty Law Center, for example, in an article which they wrote regarding flaws in these very FBI hate crime statistics, noted that many groups are unlikely to report hate crimes due to mistrust in the police. Mistrust that white people and Jews do not have, something which greatly skews these statistics to look much worse for those groups than they otherwise would. This can be corroborated by looking at the types of the alleged offenses against Jews versus other groups. Other groups, such as blacks, Hispanics, and gays, invariably report a very high proportion of violent crimes, such as assaults. For example, of 1,247 reported crimes against Hispanics, there were 661 assaults, more than half of the total, and 35% of the total reported hate crimes against blacks were assaults. Yet for Jews, assaults are a far lower proportion, less than 8% of the total. The completely overwhelming majority, 85%, of reported anti-Jewish hate crimes are intimidation and vandalism slash destruction slash damage of property, an anomaly that is not repeated in reported crimes against any other group with statistically significant data available. These are the two categories that just so happen to neatly encompass all potential anti-Israel political speech related reports. This indicates not that Jews are actually massively disproportionate victims of hate crimes, but rather that Jews are far more likely to report relatively low-risk incidents like verbal altercations or seeing a sticker to the police, precisely what you would expect, given that they have absolutely no reason to mistrust the police, like blacks, Hispanics, or gay people do. In contrast, other groups are simply infinitely less likely to go to the police, and only tend to resort to filing a report in the event of much more serious crimes against them. Hence this massive disparity in the proportion of violent hate crimes against other groups and those against Jews. And again, to reiterate what I said earlier, these statistics give us absolutely no indication of what these verbal altercations or purported acts of vandalism actually entailed. But we have plenty of reason to believe, based on other indicative and much more thorough sources like the ADL statistics, that a huge proportion of them are just anti-Israel political speech, which is being erroneously reported by Zionist Jews as hate crimes, something which American law enforcement agencies seem all too happy to facilitate, given how often they investigate anti-Israel political speech as anti-Jewish hate crimes. And we really have no reason to believe otherwise here, given that the ADL's much more extensive and complete dataset, which doubtlessly includes many of these same incidents, but with at least an actual description as to what purportedly happened, indicates precisely that indeed, the vast majority of these incidents are actually just anti-Israel. So these statistics are pretty clearly being skewed by Zionist Jews who go to the police about their feelings being hurt because people said bad things about Israel. But other groups, such as black people, are way, 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 way less likely to go to the police for things that could be encompassed under categories like intimidation and vandalism. If we delve deeper into the statistics for assaults, which are by far the most statistically significant type of violent hate crime counted here, and we look at them proportionate to population, then these statistics, if anything, actually refute the narrative of there being an anti-Semitism crisis in the USA, and actually point to there being far more significant crises of hatred against many other groups for whom nothing even resembling an analogous moral panic is happening. There were a total of 199 alleged hate crime assaults against Jews reported from January 2024 to January 2025. That is 3.9% of the total assaults. Jews constitute 2.4% of the US population, so this is disproportionate, but not nearly as disproportionate as the stats initially seem when you first look at the page, which includes the incredibly statistically anomalous number of reported non-violent anti-Jewish hate crimes. And that's also taking at face value the idea that each and every one of these assaults was a genuine anti-Jewish hate crime, because we know for a fact that's not actually the case, because American law enforcement have openly stated in multiple instances that they report political violence between pro- and anti-Israel protesters as anti-Semitic hate crimes. For a clear example of this, when a pro-Gaza genocide protester was punched and had his Israeli flag stolen by anti-genocide protesters, this was branded an anti-Semitic hate crime by the NYPD. So the actual proportion here is likely significantly lower, but we can't say exactly by how much, because the FBI gives us no information on what actually happened in these individual incidents to allow us to judge for ourselves. How convenient. For a very revealing comparison here, in the same time frame, there were 152 anti-Arab and anti-Muslim assaults. I'm counting both of these together here as it's only fair to do so, given that anti-Jewish religious and ethnic hate crimes are themselves counted together in these FBI statistics with no distinction, and Arabs and Muslims are conflated by those who hate them in much the same way as Jews are. Given that perception in the West, it is incredibly unlikely that anyone would be looking to commit a hate crime against Arabs without also meaning to target Muslims. So that constitutes 2.9% of all FBI reported hate crime assaults in this time period, while Muslims are about 1.3% of the total US population. So if we take these FBI statistics at face value, then people perceived to be Muslims are clearly at a more disproportionate risk of hate-motivated assault compared to Jews. And yet, there is nowhere near the same level of noise being made about an anti-Muslim hate crisis. In fact, there is pretty much none being made at all. Black people are victims of hate crime assault at a particularly alarming rate. They are around 14% of the total population, yet are victims of 28% of the reported assaults, a number that is likely even worse in reality, given that black people are probably the demographic that is also least likely to trust the police and actually report hate crime assaults against them. That's a significantly more disproportionate rate than those against Jews, and also a far higher number in raw numerical terms. And yet, again, there is no serious noise being made about the anti-black crisis. I wonder why. It was already abundantly clear even before we got to the FBI statistics that the idea of the anti-Semitism crisis and the global rise in anti-Semitism was concocted by pro-Israel advocacy groups due to its usefulness for pro-Israel propaganda purposes. And looking more closely at these FBI statistics, as incomplete and largely useless as they may be, which are often used as supporting evidence for this narrative, it only becomes even more clear that it is an inorganic, constructed narrative created for propaganda purposes, rather than being a rationally grounded, proportionate response to what's actually happening. These FBI statistics are somehow even lower quality evidence of the supposed anti-Semitism crisis in the US than the ADL statistics were, and that's saying a lot. Israel has massacred, at this point, easily at least 100,000 Palestinians in just 2 years. Every one of those killings is an individual anti-Palestinian Jewish supremacist hate crime of the most serious sort, not just bad words, not just seeing a sticker that you didn't like, actual murder. That means that there have been more hate crime murders of Palestinians by Israel than every single purported anti-Jewish hate crime logged by these sorts of organizations in this same time period combined. Even if we include the vast majority of them, which are just Zionist Jews having their feelings hurt by seeing people saying mean things about Israel. Yet where is the hubbub about the global anti-Palestinianism crisis, given how this is clearly way more serious than anything that is even remotely happening to Jews? Where are the headlines about the global rise in anti-Palestinian hate crimes? It's all non-existent, isn't it? PhilosophyTube has sure never spoken about this in such terms. But she has for Jews. She and the many others like her who have bought and spread this narrative have been played. And I hope that she realizes this and musters up the courage and humility to say so. Daniel Raab is an American Jewish man from Chicago who spent many years campaigning about the alarming global rise in anti-Semitism, such as seeing people on his university campus criticizing Israel. He was a member of a pro-Israel campus pressure group that lobbied his college administration to fight anti-Semitism. The totally 100% real anti-Semitic incidents that he complained about were doubtlessly reported to the ADL and included in their yearly anti-Semitic incident list. Raab later moved to Israel. There, he received instant citizenship and a plethora of ethnic privileges purely because he was born Jewish, all at the expense of the Palestinian people. He then joined the IDF to satiate his desire to kill Palestinians firsthand in the name of Jewish supremacy. In late 2023, Raab invaded Gaza. There, he single-handedly massacred multiple members of the same Palestinian family who were out looking for scrap metal to sell in order to raise money to buy food. He lined up his shots and hit each of them in the head one by one with his sniper rifle as they came to assist the previous members of their family who he had shot. Raab freely and openly admitted to his crimes on camera when he was shown drone footage of them and asked whether he was the perpetrator, a poor victim of the anti-Semitism crisis. Michael Starr is a Canadian Jewish writer from Toronto who has spent years writing articles denouncing global anti-Semitism, which he lists in his author biography as one of his specialties. He frequently writes articles that cite the very anti-Semitic incident reports that we've gone over here as authoritative evidence that Zionist Jews like him are an imperiled and marginalized victim group. This one here is an article that he wrote about the worrying surge in anti-Semitism based on the ADL statistics that we went over here. Starr moved to Israel in order to receive ethnic privileges for being Jewish at the expense of Palestinians back in 2009. He immediately joined the IDF to brutalize them firsthand. In 2023, after Israel's attack on Gaza began, he re-enlisted, eager to contribute to the Jewish supremacist genocide. He wrote an article about his experience doing genocide where he outright admits to killing a Palestinian teenager in Gaza who was looking for food. Being a narcissistic Zionist, he of course tries to frame himself as some sort of victim, even when he's recounting a literal murder he committed. He wrote, "The young man I had killed couldn't have been much older than 18. He was in civilian clothes. He was unarmed. My heart sank when inspection of a bag dropped by one of the men revealed foodstuffs inside. These people walk among you. It is them and others like them whose propaganda efforts and claims of victimhood have convinced many of you, despite the total lack of evidence, that there is an anti-Semitism crisis. There is such a direct link between this narrative and the Gaza genocide that you can literally find people like these two who have spent many years spreading that narrative and who are in fact still spreading it, who literally went to genocide Palestinians firsthand, in part enabled by that propagandistic lie. You have to be way more vigilant about obvious bullshit propaganda narratives. You have to ask actual questions about them. Otherwise, you might inadvertently contribute to a genocide." This is the sort of thing that political commentators and big-time online, politically charged content creators who likely consider themselves to be pro-Palestine, such as PhilosophyTube, should have been able to clock immediately, or should have at least thought to fact-check. And it's very worrying that so many of them have just completely failed to do so. Those who fell for this need to take a step back and think deeply about what led them to accept so readily such a simple and easy to refute genocide enabling propaganda narrative, one that had already been refuted before the Gaza genocide even began. The information was already out there. What is it that stopped them from searching for it? It is extremely disappointing that they didn't even think to check whether there was any evidence for this narrative, where it was originating from, or to think about the propagandistic purpose that it might serve. It is, unfortunately, still extremely and really irrationally important to many people, even well-meaning pro-Palestinian people, that Jews be seen as an eternally oppressed and imperiled population. It's become ingrained in the Western psyche in the last 50 to 60 years or so to see Jews in this extremely reductive way. The average Westerner knows practically nothing about them beyond the Holocaust, and many seem very attached to the belief that nothing has changed in their circumstances since then, when in reality they have changed a whole lot.
When you talked about anti-Semitism, it meant, does it affect your job opportunities? Does it affect your access to higher certain institutions of higher education? Does it affect where you're going to live? Does it affect negatively your interactions with the law? That's what anti-Semitism meant. They were quantifiable, palpable, lucid expressions of this phobia, whatever you want to call anti-Semitism, okay? By that reckoning, can you name me a place in the United States where a Jew would have trouble purchasing a home or renting an apartment? Name me one place. I'd be curious. Can you name me one university, one college, one in the whole United States where a Jew would have trouble getting in because he or she was Jewish? One. Could you name me one profession? Does the medical profession discriminate against Jews? There's a legal profession. I mean, that was once a problem. That's why Jewish law firms are created, because they couldn't get into the white shoe WASP law firms. Does that exist anymore? So this is just completely and totally ridiculous to talk about anti-Semitism in the United States. On the contrary, being Jewish gets you into professions. It's an asset in our society. In publishing, being Jewish makes a big difference. You know what they used to call the New York Review of books? They called the New York Review of each other's books, and they were all Jewish.
These sorts of false perceptions of there being an endless anti-Semitism crisis and Jews endlessly being in constant peril are very advantageous for Israel and its Western allies. And that's precisely why these narratives have been harped on for decades, to allow Israel and its many Jewish supporters abroad to play the victim, when in reality, they have been creating millions of victims. The concocted anti-Semitism crisis is a very prominent and very direct example of this. Unfortunately, some people will never be convinced, regardless of how much the evidence clearly refutes them. Jewish exceptionalism is simply far too ingrained and, bizarrely, such a core part of their very identity as Westerners that it's gotten to the point that for some people, seriously questioning it is just unthinkable for them, as painful as it would be for a devout religious person to question their faith in God. But I still have faith that at least some of you who've gotten this far in this video might have actually learned something here and might actually be seriously questioning what you previously believed. And I especially hope that you've realized that in holding and spreading these beliefs without ever actually investigating them, you may have inadvertently harmed a cause that a lot of you hold very close to your heart.
And with that, we come to the close of this week's episode. As always, stay curious, stay courageous, and keep asking the questions that unsettle power. Break through silence and light the way toward justice. I'm Bethany Marks, your host and narrator. It has been a profound honor to share this space with you. A space where truth is spoken without compromise, where resistance is carried with reverence, and where solidarity is never conditional and never up for negotiation. If you have reflections, questions, or if you feel called to step behind the mic as a future host, we welcome your voice. You can reach us anytime at twippodcasts@gmail.com. To our listeners, thank you. Thank you for your time, your trust, and your willingness to walk this difficult road with us, and to the brilliant team whose vision and dedication keep this platform alive. Bob Funk, Stanley Robinson, Stephen Lowe, Sophia Rose Woolman, Tani Abu Mosa, Dr. Rana Awad, Professor Yara Rashid, Abby Masri, Juliet Salome Olivier, Renaud Al-Ghul, and our editor, Mohammed Al-Ghul. Your labor, your spirit, and your unwavering commitment are the heartbeat of this show. You remind us each week that storytelling is not merely a craft. It is resistance. It is care. It is collective memory. Until next time, keep walking toward truth. Keep walking toward Palestine. This Week in Palestine is a production of Truth and Justice Radio, proudly broadcasting from WZBC Student Radio at Boston College. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We'll return next week. Until then, take care. Stay steadfast. Free Palestine.